Hey guys, my name is Miller Montgomery and welcome to the King Collective podcast, where I interview men making a massive difference in the world. These are kings of their kingdom. Listen in. Hey guys, it's Miller here and welcome to another episode of the King Collective. Today I'm joined by a man called Stefanos Sifandos. I love saying your name. It rolls off the tongue. It's very powerful.
Thank you, brother.
So, yeah, a great leader in doing men's work, spirituality, masculinity, femininity, all the stuff that I think are really important for all men to really tap into and to understand. So, welcome, brother. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, brother. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
No worries, mate. So the first thing I was wanting to ask you, maybe just a bit of background on, you know, your experiences, your journey up until now.
Yeah. There's so many parts and versions to our stories, isn't it? I'm asked this question often and I ask this question often. And it's always intriguing to see what people come up with. But I think I'll make it really relevant to your audience, but obviously what you've told me. Because I think resonance is very important, because when we have that resonance with each other, we tend to pay more attention to each other. We learn and grow together. We expand at faster rates. And so for me, a lot of my journey, man, has been one of hiding and has been one of living in the shadows and has been one of lying and has been one of wearing many, many masks to protect myself, to protect the fragility of my heart, to protect the fragility of my ego as well. And so for me, I fluxed in that. I withdrew from the world. I became very passive as a child. And then later as a teenager and as an adult, became very aggressive, became very outward in the world, was fighting all the time, was distracting myself with pornography, with alcoholism, with prostitution, with womanizing, with infidelity, with all of that, like really being out in the world. And that, a lot of that stemmed with unresolved stuff that I hadn't dealt with as a kid. I hadn't dealt with as an adult that I experienced as a kid, namely a lot of violence and trauma and emotional abuse that I experienced witnessing my parents between themselves, but also against me and my brother as well. And so I'm giving you the short version of that, of course. And I moved through the world really being volatile in my own experiences and in my own expression. So I was really replicating what I experienced as a kid, that volatility, because there were times when my father and, of course, my mother were kind and they were loving. And that was the confusing part for me, was what the fuck is going on? Because you're so violent, so extreme, so angry, yet so agitated, so frustrated, yet you have this love that you can give. And it was very, very challenging as a kid to figure out what part of me do I put forward so I minimize myself getting hurt. And so I realized I was replicating that as an adult. And so a lot of my relationships were burn build. My businesses were burn build. Like I remember making a shit ton of money, you know, 1 or 2 months, and then for a few months, nothing, crickets. And I would, you know, I would blame it was the economy, it was the market, it was the industry, it was everything but me. It was everything. But even then I would say, oh, maybe I don't have the skills, but I was always externalizing it, never internalizing it. And so I was avoidant of taking responsibility and ownership because the pain was too much. Until obviously I did. And there was a tipping point there where I was in a relationship and she discovered I was unfaithful in that relationship. And that was a massively transformative moment for me where I decided completely and wholly to do the work. And for me, doing the work meant going all in, creating wholeness in my life, not coming from a place of pain, wounding, fracture, and unconscious fears, going deeper into myself, being prepared and willing to do the hard work, to face the pain and face the fear, to do it on my own, but to also ask for help and seek for help. That's what meant doing the work. And for me, it was at any cost. And what I meant by that was I was fully committed, whether it meant suicide, whether it meant mental asylum, whether it meant losing everything I knew, and I lost so much of what I knew and what I identified with and what was mine, friends, status, titles, money. I went into massive debt. I humbled myself countless times asking for help, you know, spiritual guidance, spiritual healing, shamans, psychologists, counselors, energy workers and everything in between. Okay. And then spending a great deal of time on my own in solitude to really become acquainted with all the parts of me, the ugly parts, the parts that were angry, the parts that were feeling rage, the parts that were feeling fucking, I wanted to tear the world up, the parts that were in deep sorrow and sadness, the parts that were mourning, the parts that were embarrassed about parts of me, my body, my behavior, everything, man. I went deep into the shame, the guilt, the pain, all of it. And we avoid that so much in our society. And I knew that earlier because I've been a student of the mind for so long, but I hadn't integrated it and embodied it. And that was a revelatory realization for me. And I'm just giving you a very quick overview, like Snapchat overview here. but essentially that's a little bit of my story. And then of course, where I am today is what was born from that was this need to understand, know, and feel more of the human potential and the human condition, especially what does it mean to be a man in contemporary times, and taking ownership of that and looking at what does it mean to be a good man, but what does it mean to be good at being a man? And with that, I am where I am today. I do what I do today. I serve in the way I serve today in terms of masculinity studies and relationships. I focus deep in relationships. I'm in an amazing, flourishing relationship with my woman, my fiance. We get married in September. I have amazing friendships. I always have had very close friendships. That's been a blessing for me on many levels. And there's been a few reasons as to why, of course. One of them was because I used friendships as a way to get out of the family home. So I spent a lot of time on the streets, spent a lot of time in other people's homes, spent a lot of time everywhere but my home. Which gave me a new symbol and meaning for home and how I relate to home today as well. But yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Cool, mate. Yeah, and I appreciate your honesty through that. I think one thing you mentioned there was, you know, you had to kind of burn your life to the ground in a sense of, or like, you know, kind of destroy things in order to create it. And that's something that I've definitely noticed, you know, for myself and for other men who are kind of doing this work, is they have this kind of drop moment where everything just burns. Do you think that that's like a necessary or important thing to do for every man? Or
yes, it's an absolute unequivocal yes and. And so it's not just for men, but for humanity, particularly for men, but for humanity and the collective consciousness. And also beyond that, I think it's a simple physics. And I think it's, for lack of a better term, I'm sort of just coining this now. I'm sure someone's said it before. I've never heard of it. Spiritual physics, where we have to break down in order to break through and create. And so what that looks like, or what that looked like for me, was a complete deconstruction of self. You know, I lost partnerships. I went through in my own mind all the things that I'd done, all the man that I was, the person that I was, the way I behaved towards women throughout all my relationships, all the infidelity, all the rage, all the anger, all the aggression, all the frustration, all the projection, the shame, the guilt, the pain, the fear, all of it, man. And I had to deconstruct and break down all of that in order to create a new version of me. And that's that phoenix rising out of the ashes. And I think collectively where we are as a humanity, we need to do that in order to really flourish. What we do as a humanity is that we do that, but we continue to do that and we become addicted to that cycle. And there's nothing wrong with that cycle. The cycle is actually healthy, but the intensity that we keep living through that cycle, it's more than it needs to be because we're not grasping the lessons. And that was me for most of my life. Like, I'd have these revelatory moments, but they were fleeting because I wouldn't be with them long enough to integrate them and understand them and know them, become acquainted with them. And so when I started learning that there's another way, I was able to create less pain in my life and growth through less pain as opposed to growth through massive, intense pain, which I think is still necessary. It's just we overdo it.
No, I totally agree. I think, you know, it's like just that moment of reflection, that moment of why, you know what I mean? I think it can definitely go a long way. So I wanted to ask you what, you know, this term masculinity, I guess it's been thrown around a lot lately. It's this kind of term that's, you know, I don't know, got many different meanings and stuff. What is the healthy masculine to you?
Cool.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. It's a big one, and it's a great question as well. And so healthy masculinity to me is a lot of things. And it begins with an exploration. That's the first thing I'm going to say around healthy masculinity. There's a willingness to explore. There's a willingness to explore who we are, how we're behaving, how we show up, how we treat ourselves, how we talk to ourselves, how we view the world, what our models of reality are, what our belief systems are, how we treat other people. And I think that willingness is one of the key principles of being in healthy masculine posture, that willingness to go beyond what is the norm and what is familiar and what is the mundane and what is comfortable, and venture into the uncomfortable, venture into the unknown. I think that's a big part of healthy masculinity, and to do that from a place of carrying an intention, very key here, carrying a deliberate intention to benefit our own lives, but also the lives of those that we impact. And I think that's one of the cornerstones of masculinity. And so it's being more inclusive than we are, but also not being over-inclusive, being sustainable, because that's not actually possible. It's that, you know, we have this, as a side note, we have this notion of unity consciousness. And whilst I'm a big fan of unity consciousness and I'm a big believer of unity consciousness, we have so much fucking work to do as a humanity, as a collective, and as men before we can get to that point. Our brains can't fathom what it means to be close with 7.6 billion people. Our brains can't fathom being close, like intimately close with a few hundred people, let alone 7.6 billion. So our bodies, our brains, our minds, our history, we just can't. And so we have to begin with ourselves and our immediate brethren and our immediate families and communities, and begin to be more inclusive in that way. And that's a stepping stone. That's a launching pad. Then we can begin to have a discussion about what does it mean to be really deeply more inclusive beyond that. But for me, the conversation is moot if we can't get it, not, I don't want to say right, but if we can't get it in alignment with who we are and with our immediate tribe. And so part of being a healthy masculine man, I mean, look, I have models around this. So one of them is the 5 P's of masculinity. Another one is 5 tactical virtues, which I learned the 4 tactical virtues from Jack Donovan. And I elaborated on that and added another tactical virtue. So these, for me, these are the foundations of healthy masculinity. And essentially it comes down to, what does it mean to be a good man and what does it mean to be good at being a man? And it really begins with, what does it mean to be good at being a man? Like, can we just get the basics of manhood right first? And that's where the tactical virtues come in.
Great. What are the virtues?
I can't tell you. I don't know them. I can't remember. No, let's go into them. I'm going to briefly go into them. Because, you know, I extrapolate these really deeply in our, in the work that I do. So, but I definitely want to touch on them because I think they're important. And I think before we can talk about what does it mean to be a good man, in other words, you know, like virtues and character and, oh, he's honorable and he's admirable and he's, you know, he's a compassionate man. Before we can even go to all that, we have to just get right being good at being a man. And so a lot of this is linked to biology and evolutionary theory. So a lot of this is linked to, how have we evolved as men? What have our roles been? And what are we neurologically, behaviorally, and culturally accustomed to? And can we become proficient and carry aptitude in these areas, in these tactical virtues? Because when we do, and if we can, it really sets the foundation for being a man in the world, a healthy masculine man. And so let's begin with strength. We're talking about physical strength, but we're also talking about emotional strength as well. In today's day and age, in previous times, in hundreds of thousands of years ago, millions of years ago, et cetera, if we're talking about humanoids, a couple of million years ago, but even as I say, the last 200,000-400,000 years, we're talking about the ability to be physically strong in our environment, because men were responsible for setting the perimeter, hunting. We were responsible for certain gathering, elements of gathering as well. We were responsible for constructing and building and creating in the external world. And so we required massive amounts of strength, or we required at least to be proficient in our body, to carry prowess, physical prowess, to the best of our ability, right? To the best of what we had. And so strength is a cornerstone of masculinity. When we look at contemporary times, but also we needed to have inner strength to face the difficulties that we encountered living in a very volatile physical geography, which lends itself to courage as well. And I'll talk, courage is another one of the tactical virtues. I'll speak to courage in a second. But that strength, that inner strength to have toughness, mental toughness and resilience, to be able to, and emotional toughness and resilience, to be able to deal with difficulty in that volatile environment. And so again, we've evolved this way. Again, the courage to step into the unknown, to step into the mystery. Every time we were setting the perimeter, we were venturing outside of what was comfortable, what was familiar. We needed courage for that. You know, we live sedentary lives today. We live in a life where we're not really challenged as men. Challenge is the domain of the masculine, one of the key domains of the masculine. We are not really challenged in the world today. We live in a relatively easy place where it's peaceful times for majority of humanity. I'm not naive or blind to some of the atrocities that are occurring globally, and the poverty and the famine and the billions of people that are distressed and displaced and don't have food and are dying of disease. However, relatively speaking, we live in the most peaceful times that we ever have. Now, I'm not saying go and punch someone in the face in the middle of the street, or if you're walking in a shopping center, just to create challenge and create friction in your life. What I'm saying is, well, I'm not saying go create a war or be part of a war. What I'm saying is, where can you challenge yourself? And where can you exhibit courage? What are you not facing within yourself that really needs to be faced, as an example? And doing something that we are fearful of every day, whether it's going up to someone and talking to them and saying, hey, I just want to introduce myself, or applying for that job that you're too scared to apply for because you're scared of rejection, or starting that business that you just need to start because you know it's in alignment with your purpose and who you are as a man, et cetera, et cetera. Then we go into mastery, and we've evolved mastering certain skills. We've evolved being a contributor to our tribe. So maybe I was really good at hunting, so I would lead the hunt. Maybe you would be exceptional at making hunting tools, so you would make those. So that would be your responsibility, but you would have mastery over that. And that was a big part of your contribution to the tribe, to the family, to the small community. We have to acknowledge that consciously and deliberately, because that's very important in today's society as well. And then our honor was really tied up in the strength, the courage, and the mastery. Our honor was also our self-identity. We knew our place in our tribe. Men are so displaced in today's world. Men are so isolated more than ever in today's world. Men feel alone. That's why one of the key reasons why we have such high suicide rates, why 75, 80% of all suicides are men. We feel so alone, and there's reasons for that as well. There's reasons why we feel distressed and alone, and why we feel repressed, and we don't feel we have anyone to connect with or communicate with. We're losing that brethren and that brotherhood. And for me, I've added that connectedness as the fifth tactical virtue, because we've grown up in a brethren. We identified our sense of self-worth and our value was really identified with our brothers. We spend so much time with the men in our lives. And so I'm briefly just introducing the five tactical virtues that really I feel lay a foundation for masculinity in contemporary times. And I'm not the only one to agree with that, of course.
No, I think they're great. I think I completely agree. And I think it is simple to, I guess, hear these things, but I guess it can be very hard in obviously application, which is the challenge sometimes. But I wanted to ask you, like in today's age, there's been this big call out for the healthy masculine. Mm. And one thing I know for myself, and you briefly touched on it before, is this integration of all the bad shit or all the darkness and all the shadow work of who we are as people. And in a time that's calling for the healthy masculine, it's kind of like this counterintuitive thing of, well, you actually need to integrate all the bad stuff. Mm. And that can be a challenge in itself because, how do we do that? Mm. So I wanted to ask you, I guess, what would be some ways that you could, or that you have been beneficial for you in integrating the darkness or having a safe space to do that?
Yeah. So there's a number of ways. I have a six-step cyclical process that I use to deal with difficulty and pain and challenge and we call it suffering, for lack of a better term. I mean, although suffering is very optional in life, and we sometimes choose to suffer because that's our path and that's how we learn and grow. And I'll touch on the six-step cyclical process, but I'm going to come back to these tactical virtues. for a moment, and one of them particularly, and there's that connectedness. And so one of the ways that we move through our pain is to not do it alone. Now, I'm a big fan of being self-reliant. And in my more advanced principles of masculinity, self-reliance plays a massive role in how we view ourselves, the world, and how we deal with difficulty and suffering and pain and all of that, how we move through our fears, come face to face with our wounding, deal with our shadow self. However, self-reliance plays a role, as does being surrounded by tribe. Here's something interesting. Biologically speaking, when we're speaking to rites of passage and transitioning from the old into the new, from the what no longer serves us into something that does serve us, females have a more distinct rite of passage. And that comes in the form of their monthly cycle, their moon cycle. And so it becomes very evident that they're making a transition from being a girl to being a woman. And because that's telling her that now she's able to reproduce, that she's coming into a deeper sense of her own womanhood, and so forth. Men don't have that distinction. I mean, yeah, we have pubic hair, our bodies grow and our penises grow and so forth. But, you know, that happens for women as well. They grow too. They get longer arms and they get pubic hair. So we share that similarity, but we don't have that sharp distinction. And so for men, it's very important that we have a rite of passage that's more embedded in culture, that tells us and shows us through elders and through men that have been there before, hey, you're going from being a boy to being a man. And this is what it looks like. And it's culturally relative, sure, but we still, and so it's distinct between different cultures and belief systems and collective ideologies and so forth. But there still is an element of sameness. And when you look at cross-cultural mythology, you're able to see this, that there are distinct propositions and characteristics that outline rites of passage, but men need this. Now, in modern day rites of passage, we have rites of passage, but they're more fluid, which means they're a bit more feminine. They're not as distinct and sharp, and they're not really speaking to the core of masculinity. We go back to the tactical virtues. And so, for example, you know, you're 21 or you're 18, you're allowed to drink. You're 17, you get your driver's license. The bank gives you $20,000 on a credit card because it deems you to be trustworthy now, to give you money that you haven't earned, or you quote unquote earned, or that you haven't demonstrated really that you can pay back. Or a bank gives you, you know, we have these rites of passages, but they're very unconscious until they become conscious. And they're more fluid. They're more just happenstance. This is what happens in life. And so we just go through that. Whereas in the older days or in certain cultures, especially tribal cultures connected to land, and I'm not saying we have to go through all the rites of passage that certain tribes went through, because brother, I've done a lot of research in this space. And let me tell you, some of the rites of passage that men used to go through were fucking horrific. Mm. And they were very violent and very aberrant. And they were challenging, but they were also beyond just challenging. And that was really because the more violent a society was, the more violent the rites of passage generally were. So the more they engaged in warfare or violence and so forth, the more violent the rites of passage were, the more extreme and intense they were. But again, the characteristics of rites of passage, some of them are being in solitude, moving through a specific challenge, taking the time to learn through elders and through other wise men and a brethren and a brotherhood that can support you through your journey. Challenges, deep challenges, part of that rite of passage. We lack that in today's society in a way that is more distinct and clear.
Mm.
And so, go on, you want to ask something?
Well, I was going to ask, like, then do you think that without that rite of passage, we struggle to have that integration then?
Yes.
Is that the thing that is the link?
Yeah, that's part of it. I don't think it's all in the rites of passage. I think that's part of it. And part of it as well is coming back into a reverence and a respect for the feminine. And also recognizing the role of the feminine. So the feminine would nurture us as men, as boys, should I say. And then part of that rite of passage is moving off the teat of the feminine, off the bosom of the feminine, and realizing that this is the role that she's played. This is the compassion, the empathy, the nurturing, the beauty that she's played. And that's not all she is. The creation energy that she is as well, the mother archetype, or the mother energy as well. And to realize that there's also great power in the masculine energy, in the masculine support system, and the challenge through that, and how we then become men in our roles in society or in our tribe, community, and family. And so there's a balance there of revering and respecting the feminine and also coming into deeper reverence for the masculine. We lack that in today's society for many reasons. One is look at divorce rates and look at absent fathers. Now, I'm not blaming fathers. If I had to blame or look at responsibility, it's social, it's contextual, it's collective. It's beyond just, oh, it's a father's fault, he's not around. No, there's so many variables that feed into that. Some of it is true, though. Some of that is just there's men that haven't done that deep inner work and they're wounded, and so they run and they come from their own wounding and they neglect their children. But men, boys generally don't have healthy role models and father figures. And we have to change that. Part of that is, and you don't have to have a biological father to have that, but we have to have healthy versions and expressions and visions and examples of men that can guide us through a new version of ourselves from boyhood to manhood.
Beautiful. Yeah, I totally agree. So shifting up gears a little bit now, I wanted to get you a bit of insight, maybe just on relationships with women. So a lot of the guys listening to this will be, single fathers. And a big challenge there is that, you know, and it's the same when you're in a relationship, but there's been a loss of trust between partners or between the ex and mother and father. And obviously regaining that trust is difficult. And, you know, with the feminine, they don't want to hear words. They don't want to hear all this stuff. They want action and they want results, I guess. How would you go about, or what advice would you give single dads who are there wanting to try and prove the trust between them and their kid's mother?
Yeah, it's a great question, brother. It's a really, really good question. And the first thing that I would say to that, the immediate response is there's two things parallel that are happening. Be you, just be you. Don't try and overdo and overshow anything. Just be you. And the parallel to that is get really clear on the integrity you want to have in yourself. So get really clear on what you want to give to the world, what you want to give to your child, how you want to show up for your children, how you want to show up to your ex. The reality is that we all experience it. We come together in relationship to grow. And part of that growth is bumping up against our edges and our woundings. And what happens in most relationships and why we split up, not in all of them, but most of them, is because we hit our wounding. The other partner brings that out in us because of the deep intimacy that we share. And what happens is it's so intense for us and so extreme, it feels so much. And we wrong it, we make it wrong, and we don't have the tools, cognitive, emotional, spiritual, relational tools to deal with it. And so we part ways. And when we part ways, it's usually with animosity and resentment and hate and anger and so forth. And that festers and it stays, and we project the blame and we project the anger, and it's always blaming others. Both men and women do this. And so we have to move beyond that, and moving beyond that can be really challenging. And so as a man, you got to get clear. You got to first understand that your woman's probably going to have some resentment towards you. She has a tremendous capacity to tap into her compassion, forgiveness, and empathy and understanding as divine feminine. But so many women live in a masculine world to some degree, that so many women have blocked that feminine essence from themselves. They've disregarded that feminine essence. And so within themselves, they've turned masculine per se. And so this protective element comes on where they're unable to forgive and feel, which makes it difficult for us as well as men. And so you have to get really clear that on who you want to be, but also accept the fact that there's going to be some anguish there felt by your woman, by the woman that you were with, rather, and that you need to be patient with that. And don't try and fit into her mold. Don't try and be who she fucking wants you to be. You've got to be you, but also be you from a place of integrity. Don't cause malice. Don't be hurtful. Don't be harmful. Realize where you've come from. Do that inner work. Do the fucking work. Do that shadow work. Like, you've got to do that, and that will help you be patient. Set healthy boundaries for yourself as well. Don't allow, yes, you may be coming from anger. Yes, maybe you've made choices and taken action that have been really painful and not conducive to the health of the relationship. And how long do you want to keep feeling guilt and shame around that? Can you forgive yourself? That's another starting point. Forgive yourself. Do the inner work. Be clear on who you want to be. Keep showing up consistently to your children and to your ex-wife, not to prove anything to her, But because that's the man you want to be, because consistency lends itself to safety. When your child consistently sees you respond or react or behave a particular way to something, that child will feel safe in your presence. It's human nature. Every human will. If all of a sudden right now you just, I don't know, dropped and started doing burpees, that would be weird because it was unpredictable. I wouldn't necessarily feel unsafe because we're in a screen. There's a screen here. But if you and I were together doing an interview and you just pulled out a knife and just started looking at the knife, I would think, fuck, I've probably got to protect myself with something. This is really weird. My senses will start going up. So you can't be unpredictable in your behavior. When you're unpredictable, you're unsafe. So men, you've got to be consistent in your behavior. But that's going to come from a foundation of clarity with self, who you want to be, taking ownership of that. Acceptance, forgiveness, doing the inner work. That's a starting point.
Yeah, I think it's a great few points, mate, because honestly, like, I think sometimes it can be like, well, just I'll do anything. No. It's like, tell me what to do.
That's, you know, weakness, what I mean? And passivity. No. It's not masculinity.
And it's a trap, you know, that a lot of guys can get into because it's
desperation.
Like
desperation.
Yeah, it's desperation.
It's fear driven. Yeah. You're not solid in your own self. And whilst the feminine may appreciate that for a short period of time, she won't long term because, again, you're unstable. I'll do what you want. You tell me and I'll just do it. No. And you're coming from fear of losing your child, of being seen in a particular light, of being humiliated. I get it. I've been there, guys. I've fucking been there. Raw, naked, vulnerable, the whole lot. If you continue to succumb to that, you're compromising your own sense of self, your values, who you are, and your actual sense of masculinity. And that's not attractive to the feminine. That's not safe either.
Yeah, bloody oath. So true. Love it. Well, appreciate you jumping on here, mate. Thanks for all your insights, great wisdom. Where can guys find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on StephanosSafandos.com. My social media channels are all StephanosSafandos. Or you can find me on ReclaimYourKingdom.com as well. And they're the places that you can find me. I'm sure you'll put it in the show notes, brother.
Yeah, I certainly will. Awesome. Well, again, thank you guys. Jump on board and check him out. He's got a wealth of wisdom. So thanks, mate.